As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back to the Hold That Podcast podcast, everybody. And Brody, is anything happening in the LSU sports world with the football team in particular?
Nothing at all. No, very boring time at LSU. As always, one of the more boring beats in the country.
I'm going to make a very ham-fisted analogy here, trying to tie in recent events. Did you watch the Tyson Fury-Deontay Wilder fight on Saturday?
I did not get to. I was unfortunately covering the game.
It was a fantastic fight. But I watched the whole thing. I was into it. Fury knocked out Wilder in the 11th round, but about after round four, like you knew what was going to happen. Like Wilder was withstanding all of these punches and it was incredible to watch him. Like, I don't understand how he lasted that long. And then he had some good shots of his own. It made for a great fight, but the whole time I was like, and then of course, you know, nobody else in the world is thinking this. I was like, Deontay Wilder feels like LSU right now. Like,
ooh.
Haymakers everywhere, and he is like this guy who came in to this Fury trilogy undefeated, knocks out everybody, like, but all he's got is his right hand. He doesn't know how to box. Like, that is the short analysis of it. He just has this huge right hand that knocks out everybody, and it didn't knock out Tyson Fury, and he cracked him. Like, over the trilogy, he knocked Fury down, I think, four times with, like, stuff that would have stopped every other fighter in the world, and it did not stop Fury. Fury won, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I feel like LSU is this behemoth of the sport kind of bouncing off ropes and Ed Ogeron and all this stuff. And it's just, like, everybody in the world is waiting for the knockout punch. And it's not fun. I don't enjoy being on the receiving end of that. But I feel like that's where LSU is. Am I wrong?
I got to say, man, I love making fun of your analogies, but I think that one works. I think there's a lot of truth to that where it's this thing that – everybody sees this juggernaut, and we all know where it's headed right now, but, you know, credit where it's due, they're kind of hanging in there, and I know that's not like what anyone's thinking right now, but I do actually give Ed Ogeron a little bit of credit with how he's handled these few weeks, so if we want to keep that parallel going, I think that might be it. But, yeah, no, I mean, obviously, and we're like tiptoeing around the obvious thing, because we don't feel like we need to say it, but the obvious thing going on right now, obviously, is LSU just got, quite frankly, destroyed by Kentucky on the road, and you know, it was Ed Ogeron's future was already pretty much likely that he was likely going to not last the season. But I think it's safe to say Saturday was kind of, you know, as I wrote in my column, kind of the night the dam burst, you know, where it was the night where everybody went from this seems like it's happening to this is an inevitability where there is literally no possible way around it. And I think it's always going to be a sad situation, and framing it any other way is just kind of, you know, heartless, I guess, for lack of a better term. But LSU, yeah, they got crushed. And they got crushed in ways they hadn't been crushed all year. And I think that's almost, for me, where the red flag comes out. Because it's like, it almost, and I am not using those dramatic words, like they quit and all that stuff, because I just hate that. And I don't think that's really what happened. But there was a little bit of that, a little bit of the run defense that had looked pretty solid kind of recently in the, mm-hmm. the pass defense. They were just getting schooled, and you saw coordinators on both sides of the ball just schooling LSU in ways you hadn't really seen since maybe the Chip Kelly game. And I think that's where you're just like, oh, wow, they're finding new ways to get destroyed. And it just looks like the effort's not there anymore. And then you're adding on like three of your best players going down. Keishon Butte out for the season now. It's just, it officially was kind of for me the moment where it's like, I don't think there's a way to recover from this. Because obviously the five of the next six games are actually the hardest games of the season. It's worth reminding people. So they haven't even played their toughest games yet. They're 3-3. And it just, there's no light. It's, I don't know how to put this. I'll just say it appears that Ogeron is not going to last the season as LSU head coach. And I do not know when it will happen. Scott Woodward is a very difficult man to read, a difficult man to know what he wants. But it does not seem that Ogeron will last the season. I think is that okay for me to say?
That's, I mean, you were the sourced reporter here. Here's my couple thoughts on UK, and then we will gladly move on. I was thinking throughout the whole game. I was like, LSU somehow found a new way to lose. Like, yeah. It was an opposite game. The only thing they did well on Saturday was run the ball.
Exactly.
I mean, what? And then just the defense. I mean, it looked, I think I tweeted this out, it looked like we were playing Alabama in a year that is not 2019.
It's exactly what it looked like, yep.
Late in the game, holes are opening up. It's like block, 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 block. There's a giant hole, and oh my God, he's at the third level already. Like, there is a safety in between the running back and the end zone. And that I feel like that happened four or five times. And it was just like, it was so humiliating and demoralizing. And like, I know part of that is scheme, but other part of it is being out-physicaled by Kentucky.
Yeah.
Brody, I don't, like...
And hey, I gotta say this, though. We do have to stop acting like... I mean, don't get me wrong. I've written it, too. I know it's a bad loss, but Kentucky's just been good for 3 years. We gotta give them credit. But anyway, continue.
I know, but still, it is not... It is a status thing. It is...
They should not have the physical advantage, yeah.
No. And it was just like, man... I don't know. And then, like, the offense felt out scheme for most of the game, and I know they scored some garbage time points. I mean, shout out to Malik Nabers for an incredible touchdown catch. Hey. But it was
35-7. You know,
it was like, way too late.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just the most upsetting game of the season so far in a horrible season. And I don't know. I mean, the only guy I have to give props to is Ty Davis Price, the much maligned Ty Davis Price. It didn't matter at all, but I mean, he ran hard. They somehow found ways to get him in space. And he had arguably the best game of his career, which kind of says a lot about, you know, maybe the unfortunate way his career has gone, where, you know, his time in the spotlight has not been the best. And now his best game is one of LSU's worst losses of the Ed Ogeron era. So I feel bad for him. Props to him. And you know what? That's all I want to talk about the Kentucky game, because it was bad. It was just humiliating. We looked like Mississippi State out there, and I know we barely beat State, but I don't know. I'm going through old tropes now. That's what I'm lashing out at. It's like we just look like a bottom tier SEC West team, and that's not where LSU should be. And so, as you said,
well, before we move on, I also just want to keep piling on, but it was also like, I mean, the offense had a bad game and all of that, but like nothing that I saw with the offense was like new information to me, if that makes sense. Like you said, the running game was shocking how well that actually did go. But even that, it was probably when they were dropping back into pass defense. You know what I mean? Yep, but yep. Still, give credit where it's due. But in the passing game, you know, it kind of continues this weird trend of Johnson starts 8 of 8 and looks really sharp, and then just ends just the rest of the game was brutal. He had a tough day, but everything about the offense is like, that's kind of what I thought to some extent. Defensively, it was shocking, because I know we talk at length about how Kentucky finally has an offense and all that, but they haven't looked that good. Like, it's not like they've actually like dominated offensively.
No.
And what was jarring was watching there were probably four coverage busts that I really counted. There were some bad ones. But what was more jarring to me was how often they'd get these like 25, 30-yard chunk plays where it doesn't even really look like somebody is specifically messing up. Like, they just called a play that fooled LSU to go exactly, like, to play them exactly how they wanted to. Play actions where a tight end would be magically set up 30 yards downfield for a nice play. Like, they just look sharper and smarter than LSU in every way. So, again, it's just, like, worth mentioning, because Jake Peets has been the guy dunked on for the last, like, 4 weeks, and Jarontae Jones was like, look how great that is. Well, I think you saw Saturday Liam Cohen kind of work Jarontae Jones, so it kind of evens out. But anyway, I'm sorry. I know it's not like the point of what this podcast needs to be, but it's like you said, they found new ways to lose, and it was just like, oh, we were a little fooled with the defense. Because, for example, I still believe everything we said about the defense for the last few weeks. They did some great stuff. But it is one of those things where I love where numbers tell us something we don't know yet. And SP Plus and like all the, you know, all the efficiency stuff would actually say, they'd be like, LSU's offense is in the 30s nationally. The defense, even though you think they look good, they're actually were in the 60s. And I remember being like, I don't know if I buy that. I'm going to veer from that. I'm going to have my own thoughts here. No, I think that actually kind of predicted what happened. Anyway, sorry.
It checks out. No, and well, it was my other thought. And I texted you this late Saturday night that I don't know how this goes on for five more weeks. I don't.
Yep.
Because it is the worst. The worst possible outcome at the start of this stretch that is like, and you know, to linger on to Kentucky one more second, you know, they had a great win against Florida, but it was like, I would not call it a strong win. It was a big special teams play. It was, they had Florida in the right spots and it was a tough game, but like, it was kind of like they fought for it. They scrounged for a win and they got it. Big great. No. But it never scared me as I was like, you know what? LSU could go in and have the same kind of game and come out on top on the other side. Like, maybe they could pull out a win. And it was just from the middle of the second quarter, I never even had hope of an LSU win at all. And it was just crazy. And then if Kentucky is, and maybe Kentucky is really good this year. I mean, I know they're up to number 16. They have a huge game against Georgia this weekend, which, LOL, I don't think anybody's beating Georgia this year. So good luck, Kentucky. Good luck, Mark Stoops. But I just don't see this going on for another 5 weeks of, you know, where Deontay Wilder just taking shots the whole time. Like, please, somebody mercifully, like, something has to change. And I know that is the natural thing to say, Ed Orgeron needs to be fired. I have such mixed feelings about that because, as we were talking about before we recorded, like, for all of how terrible the last 2 years have been, and I do think he probably does. A parting of ways needs to happen, but it bums me out because he was an author of some of the best football memories of my LSU fandom, and that's going to get lost in the coverage soon enough. And we're going to do a full, you know, basically in memoriam after, you know, this finally happens. But I think that something needs to happen before the end of the season. And I hate to say that because it's just messy and it's not fun, but like, I don't know how this happens for five more weeks. And you know, you're talking about our guys getting out schemed. I mean, look who's coming up. Lane Kiffin's coming up, like Nick Saban's coming up.
Dan Mullen,
who has out schemed LSU's defense, out schemed Dave Aranda every time he saw him. Like, I mean, I think we know what class of coach Dave Aranda is. And I know Durante Jones is a promising coach, but I gotta say, if he's going up against Dan Mullen, I'm gonna pick Mullen every time. And so how does this happen over and over again? And it's just, I don't know how it goes on. So, as we said earlier, tell me what you're hearing about just the coaching situation. There's no way Ed can save his job, right?
I never say things like no way, but yeah. I mean, it appears it is over for Ed Orgeron. And it's going to, I think it's going to be a really good education into what Scott Woodward wants and what he is like as an AD. It's our first real time seeing like this, something like this since he's been at LSU. Cause I don't know, you know, how he's going to handle this in the sense of I know this much. He is not a reactionary man. He's not an overly impulsive guy. He is a pretty bottom line thinker and a pretty, you know, I think he isn't going to fire somebody impulsively just to get it done. He is going to do something when he sees there is a clear benefit to do, like in terms of the in season versus end of season thing. Like, he's not going to do it just because he thinks he needs to. It's going to be, what's the benefit versus the counter of in season versus out of season? I think he's going to wait. And, you know, I think actually leading into that game, I think a lot of people really did tell, you know, around the program really did think it was going to be wait till the end of the season if he can. But I think Saturday probably does change that. Yeah, I mean, just how it looked like things were just unraveling, I think that does change the timeline. But I also think everything that we've ever learned about Scott Woodward in his past and here is he's a have every duck in a row, have every solution ready, have all of that lined up before he does things. So you look at, he waited till Willingham finished his season at Washington during an 0-12 season when he took over as AD. Waited till then to go hire Steve Sarkisian after. Waited the season. He waited the season, you know, to you know, fire Kevin Sumlin, even though some wild stuff was, I could be completely wrong there. I apologize if so. But, you know, I think he tends to have the guy lined up right away. And even you look at the hiring of Kim Mulkey, you know, I mean, they fired Nikki Fargus and basically
they didn't technically fire her, did they?
Exactly. Thank you. That's my point.
New opportunity.
Everybody in that program knew she was on her way out for quite a while, but they had the solution lined up and waited on her terms to get it done so that when she was out, they could, while doing that, also announce the replacement, basically. Anyway, sorry. That's kind of how he operates. So I do think he's going to, one, you know, if humanly possible, wait. And again, the fact that it hasn't happened and it's after Ed Ogeron's Monday press conference, probably not going to happen this week and so on. Like, that's proving he's not that impulsive. Two, I think he is not going to do it until he has every duck, you know, in a row, everything lined up completely. And that goes for the lawyering that's going to be going on and is going on already behind the scenes of buyout stuff and off the field things that are, you know, being kind of, you know, debated on right now. And if they're going to negotiate that buyout down, stuff like that, I think that's all getting ironed out. I think he's not going to do it until he is sure on an interim, and I mean, that's not a secret, but the interim situation has been a issue, you know, through this whole conversation for 4 weeks
right now,
is, you know, who in the world is the interim? Because, shoot, the biggest criticism of Ed Ogeron right now is how, you know, troubled of a staff he's hired. So mm-hmm. It's not exactly like you're going to turn to your inexperienced 39-year-old OC who's already under fire. That's a thing. And then there's just a lot that I think he is going to wait on. So anyway, it's a long way of saying I don't think he's going to be impulsive, and I don't think it's going to happen. As of right now, I don't think it's going to happen this week. And if it doesn't happen this week, it almost opens it up to I don't know when it's going to happen, and I apologize. But I will end that long rant with Scott Woodward is a guy that is difficult to truly know. He's a guy who keeps his cards very close to the vest. Everything I even just said about him is even more proof of that, how he kind of no one knows anything until it happens. So I don't know, and he can prove me wrong at literally any second. I won't lie to you guys and pretend I know. But yeah, that's the situation, I'd say.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
I think judging his history is important because, you know, he does have this reputation as a big game hunter, and he goes fishing for the big names. And if he fires Ed after next week, or, you know, before any time in December, he will not be able to do that immediately. He will not have his ducks in a row, because this coach, who whatever the big name is going to be that he's going to go after, will still be coaching football somewhere else, likely a successful place.
Wait, I'm so sorry. Can you say that again?
I'm just saying that, like, he will, like, if he fires Ed midseason, he will not be able to have his ducks in a row because coach he will go after will still be coaching football at another school successfully, theoretically.
It's a crucial point. Yeah, you're not going to replace him mid-season. And I think one of the main pros and cons to now or later is the recruiting class argument. And yeah. Don't get me wrong, you can't wait till after the early signing period. I mean, at some point you got to. But I don't know if LSU is exactly one of those schools where you have to make a panic move to save the recruiting class. Like, I think
right.
LSU's recruiting class, especially considering how many Louisiana kids are the highlight stars of that class, I don't exactly think that this class, I mean, obviously it's going to take a hit. That's just common sense. But I don't think it's going to unravel, you know, with the Ogeron situation. I'm sure it's taking a hit. I'm not denying that. But I don't think it's going to unravel. I still think it'll be a perfectly good class, and the new hire might even elevate it. So, yeah, I don't think
That's the classic thing. It'll take a hit, you know, in the short term, and then whatever big name comes in to replace Ed, whenever that is, will get some guys in, bring some guys back, whatever. It's going to be fine. So if he does fire Ed in season, it will be the first time he's ever really done that, right?
I could be completely incorrect. I have not looked up every little one he's done, but yes, as far as I know.
So let's talk. I know we briefly talked about interim options, but like the only two I can come up with are Corey Raymond and Steve Ensminger. Am I missing somebody?
Well, this goes to a different thing of who's a good one, but I think there are others you could consider. Mickey Joseph would be one. I think they play hard for him. I think he's a guy who does a lot of recruiting. Well, he's a major recruiter, of course he is. Like, you can make an argument there. Greg McMahon would be my wild card. It's not going to be Greg McMahon. I feel confident about that, but he would be my wild card one because special teams coach is basically the one coach in the entire team who coaches everybody on the team. And he's a veteran guy who's been around a lot of great teams for decades. Like, he'd fill that kind of veteran presence role and knows what he's doing. But yeah, I think Corey Raymond is probably the best option on staff. And I think Steve Ensminger is a fun possibility. I think Steve Ensminger would hate that job. As a man I know pretty well, I think he would. It's everything he hates. But I think it is something that has like been discussed.
I mean, he's still around. He is,
and he's been around a little more than he was, from what I understand. Yeah,
right. Yeah, I mean, you know, this isn't fun. I hate. You know, it's not even fun to be like, oh, who's the interim going to be? It sucks. And it sucks that it's happening right now, because I would rather it happen at the end of the year. And you know, I was thinking to the last time with Les and whatnot. And you were not on the beat yet when Les got fired, right?
No, I was not. Arrived a year later.
It was the next year. Yeah. Okay. But do you remember the year before when he saved his job with that win against A&M?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even feel Ed could win two more games and there's not even going to be a scintilla of that. Like,
no,
there was this.
It's
crazy to think about how different that is, and it bums me out because there's not even a chance. It doesn't even feel like there's a chance, and like, it feels weird to say that on October 11th at 1:30 as we record this podcast, that like LSU as a program is done for the season.
Well, and you know what the difference is. I mean, there's a lot of comps to the Miles era that can be made, but I think the fundamental difference is when Les was coaching for his job, it was just different. It was like, you're not achieving the level we want to, but it wasn't you're not doing well. Like, his struggles right. were 9-3 years and yeah. frustration over the offense not modernizing. And this is in no world a Les Miles defense account. But like, even this, it's, you are 3-3 to three teams that in, you know, any world you should be better than, at least like this mm-hmm. current version of them. And yes. it's not even the same. And I think that's proof of the situation, that it's kind of wild how far LSU has gone. And everyone likes to bring up, I know there's still a lot of people saying like, you can't fire a coach 2 years after a title. That's insane. But it's not even just the results, because I think a lot of just like in a vacuum context can be explained, you know, like last year can be explained. It can't. A lot of wild stuff went on last year. That can be explained away. Or even this year, like most of the time a coach winning, you know, taking a hit, you're going to get a little benefit of the doubt. It's not that. It's that the direction just seems to be trending downward. There's little faith that things are going to improve. There's little faith that And again, this is not my opinion. I'm just telling you, there's a little faith in the building that he's the guy who's going to make the right hire to turn things around, or, you know, and that's where you, it's not about just the results. It's about where the forecast is. And that's the hard part.
Yep. I mean, he's had two chances and he has failed miserably on one, and he jury's out, but the jury is also seeing a 3-3 team on the field that will not be favored in any other game besides ULM. So fun stuff. Let's quickly talk about, and you know, we've already talked about it, the moment that anything happens, we will have an emergency podcast for you guys. So I don't want to dive too deep into who's going to come replace him because we're not even there yet. But I do want to talk about what I would like to see out of a replacement. And I want a scheme guy.
I knew you were going to say this.
Well, I'm tired of relying because, you know, the whole encapsulated Ed Orgeron era, he's a master recruiter. He brings in all the talent, you know, so on and so forth. And everything depends on your coordinators. And, you know, for Dabo Swinney, that works out. Maybe not so much this year, but whatever. I mean, Dabo has built this empire over there that has been consistently excellent forever, that plays in a worse conference, but we don't have to quibble on that. Ed has shown that he does not hit on every coordinator hire, and he can't keep them around, which is, you know, that's a whole reason itself. I mean, you can look at 2019 and both coordinators went on to bigger and better things, and you understand why they did that. I don't want to rely on that anymore because it all depends on that, no matter how much talent you have. I mean, look at him this year. So I would like somebody that is either an offensive mastermind or defensive mastermind and has proven themselves at a big level. Hopefully they're a head coach. I assume they're going to be a head coach somewhere else that will come here. I just feel like you have a better base floor with that. You know, am I wrong to think that?
Okay. I get it. I really do get it. And by the way, I'm not even saying you shouldn't hire a guy who's more, yeah, like to what you're saying, more of a scheme guy. And I know I have a feeling, I know you haven't said the names yet. I feel like you're going to pitch Lane Kiffin, for example, or something. And I'm not even saying do or don't. Like, I actually have no opinion on which way you should hire. I think it is an incredible flaw or mistake, I mean, to pigeonhole yourself with a type of hire. Not even pigeonhole yourself, but get too reactive over what just didn't work. It's the biggest problem I see with coaching hires like across history. It's not about the type of hire. It is just about the hire. It is really not complicated. Like, it's very complicated. So I think hiring coaches is one of the most complicated things that no one knows. It's like quarterbacks. But it is just, is he good or is he not? It's just, you have to just think that way. Like, are they competent? Are they good at these things? Because I mean, look at the best coaches of the last 20 years. Urban Meyer has never called an offensive play in his career. Dabo Swinney has not called offensive plays. And I know Nick Saban is a brilliant defensive mind and a genius scheme guy. He is. But Nick Saban doesn't call his defenses either.
I'm going to push back on that because that is over reducing it to me because Urban Meyer.
No, they are really, all three of them are really good football coaches. Urban Meyer has not called plays. He has never been the play caller at any point.
I know, but he ushered in a new era of offensive strategy along with Dan Mullen.
He oversaw it. Yeah.
I know, but like, you can't say that Dabo Swinney like oversees or has any hand in that stuff. And it feels like Urban Meyer had more of a hand in it. And like, Nick Saban is one of the best defensive coaches to ever coach at football. Like, I don't understand.
No,
like,
Saban might not be. You're right. No. Hey, Saban might not be a great example, but even him, he is not. He is a CEO. Again, this is not me saying hire a CEO. This is me saying most great coaches in college football are not the play callers or even really the guys who are coming up with the scheme. They aren't. Urban Meyer gets credit because he saw where football was going and moved that way and hired guys who specialized in that and all that. And Dabo gets credit. I think she could get credit for that too. It is not a, I mean, here's the best way to put this. This is not me trying to dunk on Ed Orgeron anyway. Almost anyone you hire, especially for a job of this quality, I promise you, almost any one of these candidates we're talking about are good football coaches. They know football, and they are good people who have a history of being good hires of coordinators. Like, most of the time, every great coach we know, they have to replace coordinators every 2-3 years, and they're good at it. the criticism needs to be with the guy who was doing the CEO job at Ogeron. The criticism needs to be in his ability to do those things, his ability to hire, his ability to adjust. But like, say, like, again, like, I'm not even saying this person, but Luke Fickell. Luke Fickell is not, like, Luke Fickell is a CEO as well, but he's really good at hiring coordinators. Like, but he knows football too and can help adjust that. So just because, I'm not saying, yeah, I don't know if you should go hire a guy who's a, again, I'm not criticizing Ogeron, but just this, like, a line coach who has never been a coordinator. Yeah, maybe not. But veering, like, focusing too hard on being like, I want Lane Kiffin, the coordinator, because I don't want to hire OC every year, I think that is a flawed way of thinking.
I'm not saying I want a guy who's a coordinator, but I think the middle ground where we are going to find ourselves here is that I want a coach who will, A, be good at hiring coordinators. Yes, that should be a requisite. Yeah. But B, their expertise will also make those coordinators better. You know, because I don't think that Ed Ogeron is marching into Jake Peetz's office and giving him ideas on the offense. Or if he is, I don't know if they're good. I mean, you know, Ed does have a reputation for being meddlesome at times, and maybe it never works out as well as he thinks it should. You know, see Matt Canada. But like, you know, Luke Fickell was a defensive coordinator. Lane Kiffin, I know Lane Kiffin calls plays, but like, to your point, I want somebody maybe above that level, somebody who can still elevate and be a good football coach and also be a good judge of coordinator talent. And it seems like Ed is just throwing dice at these coordinators, and he hit on Joe Brady. He hit on, you know, he kept David Aranda. He didn't even hire David Aranda. He kept him around though. Smart. And then the last coordinator hires have just not been good, and it sunk him because he hasn't elevated those guys. I mean, he's like, it's basically
your criticism,
like,
should be with Ed Ogeron, not that style of coach. Like, James Franklin is one of the main candidates here, and his name is not going to go anywhere. I'm not saying he's going to take the job or if he's going to get offered the job. I have no idea. But he is one of those main guys on a list. Yes, he has been an OC in his career, but again, James Franklin is not the schematic mind on either side of the ball. Every single guy on this list, or the guys who are being pitched, the main people, they are good football coaches. They are not, I'm not saying Ed Ogeron's not a good football coach, but Ed Ogeron is not like a X's and O's guru. Every single one of these guys knows football and they're good coaches, but they're not necessarily the scheme guys aside from like a Jimbo or a Lane. So James Franklin or Luke Fickell or even a Mario Cristobal or whatever, they do know football. They're going to be fine. But yeah, like, James Franklin is really great at hiring coordinators. So again, my thing is the criticism, we shouldn't overreact to because Ed Ogeron was bad at hiring coordinators. Now we're kind of fearful of hiring guys who have to hire coordinators, because that's going to have to happen.
I need somebody above that level where it is all dependent on the coordinators.
Yeah, of course.
I need somebody who will make the coordinators better. I mean, Nick Saban is the best coach in college football history, and he has had a rotating cast of coordinators. And despite their loss this weekend, which was hilarious, like, their teams are still excellent. Like, they're still an excellent football team. And you can say yes, because they have the best talent in the country, which helps, of course. But, like, I don't know. You can criticize Bill O'Brien all you want over there. And I'm not saying I want Bill O'Brien to be LSU's head coach. No, thank you. But, like, their offense is still incredible this year. And it is just because of the level of talent and the system that is in place. And that just doesn't feel like it was here with Ed. So I take your point.
Absolutely. Well, that almost is, yeah, like, that's to my point is, yeah, I think it's, and Nick Saban is a great example of, he has to change coordinators on both sides of the ball. He is just a good football coach and a good football mind and a great CEO who knows exactly where football's going, what I need to do on either side of the ball, even if he's not an offensive guru. Like, all right, this guy is my guy and all that, and can just run a program from top to bottom that can keep continuity. I mean, if anything, the defense has been the detractor the last few years. You know what I mean? He just knows how to run a football program, right? Shoot, I'm an Indiana alum. Tom Allen. Tom Allen was becoming one of the more, like, respected defensive minds in football. He does not call LSU's IU's defense anymore. Kane Womack did a great job last few years, blah, blah, blah. But you're right. He oversees it, and he oversees the offense. They're good football coaches. And a Franklin or a Fickell or all these guys, they're involved on both sides. They're good football coaches. I think Ed Ogeron is more of an outlier than I think a lot of people realize. So, like, don't knock CEOs because of Ogeron. I think he is an extreme version of that. that isn't the, he's the, not even the exception, but he's more of the exception than the rule of what that role needs to be. And now I'm sounding like I'm arguing for CEO. I'm actually just arguing for don't get reactive to a certain type. Just hire the guy who knows how to run a program best in any way.
I'm not saying, I don't want the head coach to be calling plays. They don't have to call plays. That's not a requisite. Yeah. I'm just saying I want some specialty. I want some expertise on one side of the ball a little more than Ed Orgeron has, clearly.
My question then is, does any option on the list not qualify for that? They all qualify for that.
Yeah, they do. The two people tops on my list right now are Lane Kiffin and Luke Fickell.
Yeah.
And that is maybe reactive. I would welcome James Franklin. He does not excite me as he excites other people. I don't know. I'm just not like enamored with, they haven't been super consistent at Penn State. And I know it's a tough place to be super consistent, but it's still a great football program and he's done a great job there. But I don't know, man, he doesn't do it for me. And that's not even, I can't break that down for you data wise, but
yeah,
I mean, he has had his struggles as a head coach when we're talking about late game situations and timing, and Penn State, for however much talent they put out, seems to underachieve a lot. That's not what I want here. An interesting name that somebody asked me about and that I had heard he might have sniffed around the job a little bit is Eric Bieniemy. And I don't know why this guy never gets hired for a head coaching job, and maybe that's for some other reporter out there to figure out. It seems like he interviews at every single job. He coordinates one of the best offenses in the NFL in NFL history. It's because he has Patrick Mahomes, but it's a great offense. I don't know. So, I know there will be so many suitors for this job, and we can do a deeper dive on these guys when the firing actually happens, whenever that does. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, I was told Eric Bieniemy, as far back as September, did kind of reach out to LSU and had some interest. I'm not sure if there's any interest back in him. Bieniemy, I don't know exactly why he has has gone unhired so many times when he's in the cycle every single time. I do know, if you look at his Wikipedia page, there are a lot, again, I am not reporting anything. This is almost probably reckless me to say, but if you look at his Wikipedia, there are some pretty, tough off the field things in his past. So maybe that is part of it. I don't know the answer to that. So maybe I shouldn't even be saying that, but no, I think it's tough. I'm not even arguing for or against Lane at all. I think Lane Kiffin is one of the better offensive minds the last 20 years and is a great coach, and he's doing awesome stuff at Ole Miss right now. But, and by the way, can't confirm, there's a lot of interest in Lane Kiffin. Like, he's a name that has come up to me from a lot of people. There's no doubt about it. I don't know. Like, I think you do, like, everything about Scott Woodward does say two different things. Yes, he loves a big name hire. He loves a Hollywood hire. Like, that is his thing. But he also loves, like, if you look at every single one of them, aside from probably Sark at Washington, but even Sark at Washington was kind of like, he was a skyrocketing coordinator, so that was a big name. But aside from that, they've all pretty much been guys who are proven winners and program builders who have proven they can take somewhere to a place they hadn't been. And Lane is, this year is awesome. But Lane has never, as a head coach, at least at the Power 5 level, ever proven he can build a sustainable program. That's not me saying he can't. That's not me criticizing him. It's just like, to me, he hits the Hollywood part to a T. He feels almost kind of like LSU in a way. I think there could be something really fun there and maybe entertaining. But I just don't know if, like, he hits that thing of, he is 1 year of having Ole Miss rolling. Even that, there's a lot of football left. FAU did an awesome job, but obviously that's just a different job. And Tennessee, USC aren't exactly great indicators of Lane Kiffin. So it's just like, again, not for or against, just like, I think that's a big thing. If I'm making this hire, I'm looking at people who have proven the ability to build programs. Because that, it's like, the way I feel like I keep following this thing of criticizing Ed Orgeron, but I think between Miles and Orgeron, I think there are two straight hires who have guys who have shown some major just kind of flaws in handling the top to bottom of a program. There's some just kind of, silly stuff going on these last 17 years. And LSU for 17 years has still been pretty darn good at football, even with those silly mistakes. And it's like, they've still won three titles over this time. I think if LSU just hires a guy who knows how to run a program truly, I think the sky is the limit for LSU. Like, it is still, even a program with three titles in 20 years, still a slightly untapped thing that, like, can just boom more. So, again, this is not making a case for a Franklin, or even, but it's, like, the Franklin argument. That's a better way to put it. And I am not pushing for James Franklin. I actually do not care. But I think, like, the argument for that is he's a guy who can recruit at an elite rate. So if you put him in LSU, LSU's recruiting could even get better, I think. And he's a guy who I think people slightly under, like, people point to his, like, lack of holy crap success at Penn State. I think there's, like, I think people are kind of have a warped perception of how tough of a job Penn State is, if that makes sense. Like, it's the clear number three job in the East. And even the East is five deep most years, and you're in the middle of Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania is a good talent state, but still, it's like a hard place to recruit to nationally. You're in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. Like, that's not an easy job to do what he does every year. And the fact that he's always, like, nails hires at a pretty great rate, man. Like Moorhead, Yurcich, Pry. I'm forgetting another wonderful DC. I feel terrible about that. But like. I think he does. I think he's elevated that program at a level that, like, doesn't quite get enough credit and doing it consistently. So I think if you put it at Franklin and LSU, a guy who just knows how to run a program, he has other flaws, no doubt about it. But, like, that's an example. Or a Fickell. I think Fickell would be. I don't think Fickell would take it personally. Like, just me speculating, but I think Fickell would be an incredible hire because Fickell is a top to bottom program runner who just knows what he's doing. And I'm sorry, I'm on a rant that isn't even that's away from your point. But I think part of me is just like. I think at LSU, if you hire a guy who just knows how to run the program top to bottom, you will thrive.
I think it's a good point because I think the biggest selling point that Scott Wolver can say is that even though he hasn't been here, that, you know, the last three coaches, Nick Saban, you know, being one of them, but Les Miles had his flaws off the field and on the field.
Yep.
Ed Orgeron has his flaws, as we can see. But every coach that has coached here in the past 20 years has won a national title. And they've played for another, and they've been very consistently excellent, aside from these last two seasons. So it is not hard for a incoming coach to see how he can succeed very quickly at LSU. You know, The Athletic did this. Everybody else says it's a top five job in the country. Like, that's why I'm so curious. And here's the last thing I want to say about this, and then we can move on, is that, you know, like you said earlier, Scott is a very opaque man. I mean, yep. You can say as a reporter, and I think every other reporter around LSU could probably say this, that it's a hard guy to crack. No, he is not, you know, talking to a lot of people. There's not a lot of Scott Woodward sources out there, probably. I don't know. Maybe I'm talking out of my ass there, but
no, it doesn't seem like reporters would tell you that too, 100%.
It doesn't seem like he is a guy that, you know, makes use of the media like maybe some other people do. So, A, who's his big name? Like, he surprises people everywhere he goes. I mean, Jimbo was a big get. Sarkisian was a huge get. I mean,
Peterson was maybe the biggest Peterson, get. Arguably
Peterson was
any
the biggest
them.
One.
Yeah.
Nobody expected Peterson to ever leave Boise State and plucked him out of there. And Washington went to two playoffs with him. I mean, was it just one?
Maybe one, but still, yeah.
Got shellacked. But doesn't matter. You made a college football playoff. So, like, I'm just so curious that, hey, I mean, it's so mysterious. I don't think it's going to be Jimbo. I assume not. unless somebody wants to pay out that full contract or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, I'm just curious. Also, LSU has a game this weekend. to fully paint the picture to say how bleak it is, LSU Florida. Like, the probably one of the most hyped cross division rivalries in the SEC. You know, all the other ones are pretty, haven't been great in the modern era. I mean, I know Alabama and Tennessee, which has been bloodbath after bloodbath. Georgia Auburn has been pretty good, but, like, wasn't good this year. LSU Florida has always been a great game, and this game is now an 11 a.m. kick in Tiger Stadium, and with coach's job on the line. The last time I saw, and this was probably yesterday when you tweeted it, that Florida opened as a 10.5-point favorite, which is a massive line for an LSU-Florida game in Tiger Stadium. Just, oh my God, kill me quickly. It's going to be a weird atmosphere, man. I mean, you know, LSU relaxed the vaccine rules, which was interesting. I'm curious to see how many people are going to be there. I will be in the stadium. I'm just, Man,
I'm glad you brought that up, actually.
The stadium kind of cleared out in the second half of the Auburn game when LSU was winning. And I know it was a late game, so I'm not going to be too, like, grumbly about the fans and stuff. But LSU was still winning the game, and a lot of people were leaving.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because back to even the timing conversation with Scott Woodward, I really do, part of me heavily wonders, I think that's a good way to put it, if I think Andy Staples taught me a long time ago on his podcast many times and wrote about it at length, is the firing thing often comes down to, it's not when you can afford to do it, it's when you can afford not to do it, when you can't afford not to do it. And right. it was Florida State was the big example of this. But when a fan base reaches apathy, when you're losing money out the wazoo on tickets because no one wants to go, to some points that's when you have to do it. And I do wonder if you go out at 11 a.m. kickoff against a rival in Florida and you see like a 50-60% crowd, which part of me expects, honestly.
Yep.
That might be the final straw. That might be the, you can't afford not to do it moment. And again, I don't know. But I that's just to your point. I'm glad you brought that up because I meant to say that earlier. I am watching for that. I do wonder if that's what happens next week.
I'm just curious. You know, it was a big bummer the Auburn weekend because, you know, the vibe was around the stadium. It was buzzy. It was great. Tiger Stadium was back. And then that game happens. And then Kentucky happens. And this is 11 a.m. to where, unless you're a real sicko, you're going to get maybe 3 hours, 4 hours of tailgating in max. And then what is presumed to be a loss, it's not going to be like, let's go back to the tailgate and keep partying on campus. I don't think it's going to be that. I think everybody's going to pack up and go home, and it's going to be angry, and everybody's going to be sitting in traffic calling into the postgame show. And I just don't think it's going to be a good time unless they somehow come out and win the game, which would honestly be just like one of the more WTF moments of the season. That would be hilarious. But
yeah, I saw so many people on Twitter like respond to my tweet about the spread saying like only 10. And I'm like, I think you're missing the point here. Do you realize how wild it is? 10 is a massive
spread.
A home game at LSU being a 10-point dog against a non-Alabama opponent is jarring. So I think people need to really properly understand that. And honestly, I was kind of shocked. I mean, I will say this. I always love to credit him. Action Network handicapper and just a wonderful football mind, Colin Wilson. I'm a huge fan of his. He immediately put an LSU plus 10 bet in. And I just put that on people's radar because I think one of Colin's greatest strengths and something I always refer people to him for is you see so often we run away with reactionary things, and I think he's amazing, and what makes him such a good handicapper is knowing the reality without the context of the narratives going on and all that stuff and like the overreactions and all that. And he's so good at that of like everybody now thinks LSU's washed. Well, plus 10 is actually a good bet. Granted, I believe he placed that before we knew the fates of Ollie Gay, Kayshawn Boutte. I think Eli Ricks is actually pretty banged up too right now. It's before we knew all that, so I don't know if I'm saying that's like a good bet. It's just me putting that on people's radar because I do think a lot of the times he is good at the reversion to the mean kind of wagers.
Yeah. We'll see, man. If you ask me right now, I would probably bet Florida. That's just such a big spread, though. I wouldn't even touch the game. Don't bet on this game.
Touching that's insane. If you touch it, yeah, you're stupid. I think SP Plus has LSU at a 19% chance of winning this football game.
I mean, maybe the atmosphere will be so dead that nobody's even excited about it in LSU. Surprises them.
That's the, galaxy brain take. What if we trick Florida into sleeping through it? Brilliant.
Okay, so the ultimate last question. Do you think that a 30-point loss or a 50% crowd participation on Saturday will be worse for Ed Orgeron and would force a move on Sunday?
Excuse me. Ooh.
Bless you. Jeez.
Yeah, that's called stalling. I can force myself to sneeze. I think my gut says I was going to say the crowd. Actually, no. I think a home blowout might be the worst. Like, that's just a different context. You can always kind of explain away a road loss like that, like Kentucky, because that's just stuff happens. Like a 2017 Mississippi State, whatever. I think a home blowout to a rival that's not even having a great year, I think that's probably the oh shit moment.
I think there is, I can speak for every LSU fan, that there is a unique level of vitriol reserved for Florida as well, because,
yep,
you know, all the SEC West rival was, it's like, yes, we don't like them, but like there is like a, I don't know, I don't even want to say it's a collegial feel, but it's like, yeah, we know you guys. You guys are jerks, but whatever. Go do your thing. But like, Florida is like this special, like, they come in and it's, I don't know, there's a special level of animosity there that is lasting back to the Spurrier days, and Spurrier would run up the score 60-0 on bad LSU teams. And so there's been some great games. I mean, you remember the hurricane disaster of the Darius guys here, when everybody was very mad. So I agree with you. I think a home blowout loss to a rival such as Florida would be very, very bad. I don't know. I mean, you're right. I just don't have a read on Scott. So my heart says that a blowout loss. My heart says a blowout loss does it, but I don't know. I mean, Scott also seems pretty impervious to any media pressure too. Like,
it's a great way to put it.
So I mean, maybe he doesn't give a shit.
There's anything I've learned from since he's taken over. He took over in the midst of Will Wade, Title IX issues, all this stuff. Like, he does not care about, like, you put it perfect. Like, he's impervious to media pressure. Like, he is a bottom line thinker and is just going to let you be mad all you want. And he is going to make the bottom line decision that is best for this athletic department. And I'm not saying I know what's best or don't, but I think that's how he views it. So I think you nailed it. So I don't know either.
It's going to be a fun day. You know, I will end on this. If you remember last episode, I asked people who had lasted this long to tweet at me to tell me everything was going to be okay.
You got a few, right?
I got about 10. It was nice. To anybody who has lasted this long, tweet me on Saturday morning. Let's commiserate. I will be standing in the shadows of Tiger Stadium, drinking a light beer, wondering why my favorite football team is in the dregs like it is. You know what? We can all commiserate and wonder what's next. I don't know. Do you even want to give a score prediction for this game? Do you have a feeling?
Oh, God. I'll say 38-24 Florida.
That feels right. I'm going to go with 34-17 Florida.
Love it.
Florida covers, and it's probably just enough to salvage Ed, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. I don't think it's going to be fun. I'm going to make the best of it. I'll never not show up to a game because I don't think LSU is playing well. But I can tell you this is the least excited I've been to go to a home game in a long time. So,
but you're still going, man. That's a win.
Oh, come on. That's where we are. But
that's who you are.
Yeah. But yeah. All right. Well, you know, like, subscribe, give us a good rating, even though this has been a very not fun season to cover. But I hope we have made it better. And you never know. We might be talking sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. It's going to be a wild few weeks, and we'll be here for every second of it, listeners. All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
See you, Brody.